It's 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday morning, May the 11th. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, as summer gets closer, many people have been baking or have baking on their minds, baking their skin. Having a nice bronze glow is prized by some, so much so they use tanning beds, bronzing creams, and other devices to get it. But why? What is it about a tan color that is so attractive? This hour, we're going to explore the history, culture, and the pitfalls of suntanning. We'll talk with a historian who has written a book on the history of skin, and we'll also welcome in a dermatologist after 7:30 to talk about how we can protect ourselves and what some of the mistakes are that we make when trying to get that golden glow. And we welcome your participation in this conversation. What do you think about tanning? Do you still catch some rays without sunscreen? Do you think a tan can look healthy or unhealthy? And what do you make of all the products that are on the market now to get you bronzed? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Or send an email to talk at WPR.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We are joined first by Nina Jablonski. She is head of anthropology at Penn State University and author of the book Skin, A Natural History. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for being with us. Well, in the New York Times article that we saw on this topic that quoted you, you say that this is a relatively new beauty ideal, that of looking tan.
Absolutely. It's quite an unusual beauty ideal because for many centuries, and especially in the last 300 years, in most Western countries and developed urban societies, the idea of having brown skin, bronzed skin, as a result of sun exposure was considered the mark of a hard-working person, someone who toiled hard in the fields. And so it wasn't always considered something that that would be aspired to. It was seen as really the mark of a farmer, the mark of someone who toiled by the sweat of their brow. Mm-hmm. And this didn't really have any luxurious or pleasant connotations. And therefore, the idea of having a bronze skin was actually eschewed. It was avoided. And people would aspire to be pale. And so just about, well, less than a century ago, in the 1920s, the most famous person to change this whole cultural idea of brown skin, tanned skin, was Coco Chanel, who appeared bronzed and tanned after sailing on the Mediterranean. And these photos of Chanel were broadly circulated in the media at the time through newspapers and fashion magazines. And all of a sudden, women who would never have been caught dead with tanned skin thought again about, oh my goodness, that looks pretty nice on her. She obviously is a very fashionable woman. I should consider doing this. And so this marked the beginning of a turnaround in the way that we viewed tanned skin. What had been connected to basically farmers toiling in the fields and women who had to work with them was made into an ideal of luxury and a more upper-class status.
Yeah, so as long as a rich, famous person was tan.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right, because when they put their stamp of approval, as it were, on this appearance, then it made for a societal turnaround in attitudes about tanning. And in fact, it began to be called tanning at that time, something that one would do as a process of becoming browner to look healthy and luxurious.
Yeah.
This was a mark of leisure time, not a mark of toil.
Yeah. Well, we're going to fast forward to the mid-80s. Then it started to become apparent that maybe this wasn't such a good idea.
That's right. Mm-hmm. first in Australia and then in North America, the toll taken by tanning began to be felt in increased numbers of skin cancer cases. Australia gets a lot of sun, and many lightly pigmented people from Europe have settled in Australia, and they began to suffer increased rates of skin cancer that showed up in medical statistics beginning in the 60s, more in the 70s, and by the 80s, the Australian government actually knew that they were in a very serious public health situation. And then the perils of a tan began to be railed against. And many health authorities said, you know, this doesn't look healthy. It just looks stupid because you're putting yourself at increased risk for skin cancer, rather. And a huge public health campaign was instigated more than 20 years ago about wearing concealing clothing in the heat of the sun, wearing sunscreen, mm-hmm. and wearing a hat. And various diluted messages similar to this have affected other countries. The United States, probably least affected, have been the South American countries, Brazil and Argentina, which still champion a tanned, bronzed skin as a healthy ideal.
We're going to check our weather forecast, see how much sun we're going to get today, and then we'll continue talking with Nina Jablonski, head of anthropology at Penn State University, author of Skin, A Natural History. We're looking into the history, the culture, and the wisdom of sun tanning. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your questions about this. Do you still like the look of a suntan? Do you do it with a product or go to a tanning bed or maybe not even use sunscreen when you're outside? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, May the 11th. Coming up after 8 o'clock, from the state capitol to the world, it's the Friday Week in Review. I'll have two guests from different perspectives to talk with you about the news of the week. It's your views on the news coming up after 4 this afternoon with Ben Marins and his guest, Dick Haven. That's coming up this afternoon after 4. We're talking about the history and culture of suntanning, wondering what is the allure of that suntanned look. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Nina Jablonski, our guest, head of anthropology at Penn State University, author of Skin, A Natural History. Professor Jablonski, after the mid-80s, when it became clear that sitting out in the sun without sunscreen was maybe a stupid idea, as the campaigns were mentioning, it still didn't stop this desire to have this look, though, because now look at all the products that are on the market that will give us that bronzed look.
That's right. Mm. What is so fascinating to anthropologists and historians is that the idea of having a tan is still associated with luxury and leisure and basically being healthy. And so even after tans, naturally received tans from the sunlight, it was very clear that they were an unhealthy alternative, the look of having a tan has remained a cultural ideal. And so the cosmetics and pharmaceutical industry has risen to the occasion by producing a large number of products that can imbue a person with an artificial tan. And if you go into any drugstore or supermarket or department store, you are now, you see a welter mm-hmm. of these products on the shelf, dozens, hundreds even, of artificial tanning products. And these days, one, instead of going to a tanning parlor where you lie on tanning beds, although those still exist, it's much more common to go to tanning parlors where you're sprayed with these mm-hmm. kinds of preparations. I like to say it's like, you know, a deck stain, a spraying, and you can come out looking as bronzed as you might want to look. The image of a tanned glowing bronzed body, as they now advertise it, seems to be one of the most indelible cultural images now rampant in U.S. advertising. It is quite remarkable, and the fact that it is so durable, even against all odds and against all health considerations, is nothing short of phenomenal. But humans are a peculiar species, and we embrace things that are quite paradoxical at times.
Yeah. Do you believe that the people are using these products or these the sprayed on tans and not just sunning naturally anymore?
I think a lot of women have more or less abandoned natural tanning because they realize that it's not healthy. And especially women with fair skin, they've been getting a lot of messages that it really is bad for them. And even if they're not too worried about skin cancer 20 or 30 years down the road, they are worried about the damage that it causes to skin, the breakdown of connective tissue that leads to premature wrinkling. And so many, many women are turning to these artificial tanning products. But some of them use both. They'll use the artificial tanning products and still continue to get a natural tan or try to get a natural tan outside.
Because the products aren't necessarily sunscreens.
That's right. The products aren't sunscreens. In fact, just in the last few years have companies began to integrate tanning products with sunscreens so that you can get some protection. But the original ones were simply basically chemical preparations that turned your skin a particular color and did not imbue any sunscreen properties at all. So you have to check the label very, very carefully. If you're going to go out in the sun after you apply one of these things, make sure that it has an appropriate level of sunscreen for your complexion.
Yeah. What about, there are, I know that I've heard people refer to people that maybe use tanning beds or even the products that they have that fake and bake look.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Mm. And that they like the idea of having looked as brown as if they had been lying on the beach all day, you know, in Cabo San Lucas or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because it still is associated with leisure time and a vacation and being healthy. So even people who are, you know, dissipated after a week of being in the office and, you know, feel pretty horrible, want to look as healthy as they can, and they know that if they put some of this fake tanning product on, that will make them feel better. They'll look at themselves in the mirror and say, oh, golly, I don't look that bad after all after
even
that horrible
week. Even if they look
week.
Orange, though?
Well, fortunately, the companies have been very good at refining these products so that they look less artificial. Compared to what they were 5 years ago, they're significantly better and more natural looking now. Mm-hmm. However, you still see people walking around who look incongruous. Some very lightly pigmented people, naturally lightly pigmented people, who put a lot of bronzing products on can look, you know, just strange. They look extremely unnaturally dark, and this is odd, very, very odd looking. Yeah. But the color is no longer this sort of pumpkin color. It is a more natural skin tone that mimics the natural melanin that would be produced in the skin as a result of sun exposure.
Yeah. Jan in Milwaukee joins us. Hi, Jan, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say I love self-tanners. I think they're the best invention. And also I had a question. I had heard that melanin capsules might be available at some point for fair-skinned people to take that would protect them against ultraviolet radiation.
Yes, this is something that is actively being developed, or some pharmaceutical companies and cosmetics companies are working on developing pills as well as creams based on the natural pigment melanin. I think it's important to recognize that at least the preliminary indications are that this is not going to provide any significant protection against natural sun's rays. It's a fallacy to think that even a natural tan protects you from the sun. It does very little of this. And so if these melanin capsules or melanin creams do get to market, they're still going to have to be used in conjunction with sunscreen products. They're not going to provide natural protection. They may make you look a bit more naturally brown, but they won't protect you from the damaging rays of the sun.
Thank you very much, Jan. We'll go next to Earl in Green Bay. Hi, Earl. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. One of the comments I wanted to make, I know my wife went to high school with a friend who ended up getting transferred down to a southwest state where there's lots of sun and warmth, of course. And when she came back for a visit a few years later, because of that, being in the sun so much, she looked at least 15 to 18 years older than my wife did. And I'm thinking that's not only anthropology, but I would wonder why psychologists and sociologists wouldn't study why people, when they know it's detrimental to their health, tend to do this. It's like advertising, I don't care about my health.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering what the long-range effects are when people tan in their teens, 10 or 20s, 30s, what their skin is going to look like when they get into their 50s and 60s.
Well, you have posed one of the most interesting and enduring questions in this whole study, because we know, firstly, that lightly pigmented people often do suffer terribly bad effects on their skin, not only in terms of potential skin cancer, but also breakdown of collagen and elastic fibers in their skin as a result of UV exposure, which leads to premature wrinkling. And this can be anywhere from, you know, a few years of acceleration to decades of acceleration, depending on the amount of sun exposure. So this is an incredibly serious problem. But people still, A, like the look of a tan, and B, a natural tan makes them feel good, because various studies have shown that actually the process of getting a tan leads to the production of what are called endorphins in the body, these naturally produced opiates that make you feel good. It gives you a sense of well-being. So the combination of thinking that you look good and this temporary state of well-being seems to overwhelm the long-term consequences in terms of wrinkles and skin cancer risk. It's a bit like the smoker's dilemma. Oh, I like to smoke today. I'm not going to think about the problems 20 or 40 years down the road.
And Earl, if you want to know what someone's skin looks like when they're around 50 after sunning in their teens and 20s, you can look on our website because a lot of us did do a lot of sunning when we were younger, Professor Jablonski. And, you know, I don't know. It's too late.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. Nina Jablonski is the head of anthropology at Penn State University, author of Skin, A Natural History. We're going to be welcoming in Dr. Stephen Snow, a dermatologist and a surgeon for skin cancer treatment at UW Health in Madison, coming up after we check the news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll take your questions on skin cancer and the safety of some of these tanning products. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Friday, May the 11th. And we're going to continue talking about the suntan during this hour and the health risks associated with getting that suntan. We talked with a guest in our last half hour about the history and culture of the suntan, first made popular by Coco Chanel in 1920. Previous to that, it was considered unattractive or a sign of a laborer to have a suntan. The popularity of looking tan continued through present day, even though we have heard from health officials that getting this tan naturally is indeed dangerous. Skin cancer if we sit out in the sun without sunscreen. But now there are products upon products on the store shelves that provide that sunscreen, and also products to make us look like we have been tanning. We welcome your questions for our guest this hour, who is a dermatologist and an expert on skin cancer. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. Dr. Stephen Snow is a dermatologist and Mohs surgeon for skin cancer treatment at UW Health in Madison, a professor of dermatology at the UW Medical School. He joins us by telephone. Good morning. My husband went to the Mohs clinic to have skin cancer removed from his cheek about 5 years ago. This is a big problem these days, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's reached epidemic proportions, and skin cancer is now the most common cancer in America with over a million cases a year.
Yeah, and there are different types of skin cancer?
Yes, the basal cell is the most common, and then squamous, which rhymes with famous, mm-hmm. and then melanoma, which is the dark tumor.
Yeah, the melanoma is the most deadly one.
Right, that's the most dangerous, and if we have the skin cancer screening this June 2nd, it's free at the square, at the YWCA, trying to detect early melanoma. I think most people know that the signs of melanoma are pretty well systematized now, and that if we can catch them early, we can eliminate a lot of problems and increase survival.
Yeah, the melanoma is the one if you have like a mole that has rough edges or different colors or it's growing.
Yeah, they have an ABCD rule of asymmetry. A border that's irregular, a color that's dark, and a diameter that's larger than an aspirin tablet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my husband had the basal cell. That's the most common and most treatable?
Yes, it is. And, mm-hmm. And thankfully, if you catch it early, it doesn't leave too much of a scar, too. So I hope you had a pleasant experience.
He could have had a little bit more work done. It's on his face.
Yeah.
So, it is just a line, but he says he's going to keep it there as, I don't know if a badge of honor is the way to say it, but more of a reminder to use his sunscreen every day. He wasn't someone that would just go sit and bake on the beach or on the deck or anything like that. It was just because he spent a lot of time outside running and just didn't use sunscreen through most of his life. It wasn't something he did, 20, 30 years ago.
Well, melanoma is associated with what they call a sporadic kind of a burn, whereas the basal cell and squamous cell, and they may be associated with cumulative sun damage. And you may need a certain number of genetic mutations mm-hmm. accumulated over years. And once you break through a threshold where the body can't repair those mutations, then you start developing skin cancer. Growth that cannot be controlled.
Yeah. Do you think, Dr. Snow, that that message has sunk in now and most of us slather on the sunscreen before being exposed to sun?
I would hope so, but, after reading some of the literature, you feel that, the teenagers, basically, they're in their invulnerable years, and the age, particularly from, let's say, 13 to 19, they do a substantial amount of tanning. And in fact, I think the latest figure I heard is that there are about 30 million people who do some form of tanning, whether it's in a tanning bed or at home with a sun lamp.
Yeah, that allure of that bronze skin is still there. We want to look tan, I guess.
Everyone wants to look like a Hollywood movie star, and I guess when you have pictures taken, the color of the face, I guess it's a little bit too pale, and we've been trained to say if it's too white, it look anemic and you look more ill.
Yeah. You know, the when it's a nice day like today, sunny and mild in Madison, and yesterday when it was in the 80s, you can see all sorts of students here in Madison soaking up sun on the Union Terrace or sprawled out on the lawns or even sunbathing by the lakes. So maybe they have sunscreen on, but I bet you most of them don't.
Probably not. Mm-hmm. I think there's some evidence now to suggest that in addition to looking better, some people feel that there's a, I don't know if the word is correct, but it's like mood-altering kinds of effects of the sun. It makes you feel more relaxed. And I think the average person who gets a little bit of sun feels that way. Now there seems to be some evidence that in addition to the psychologic effects, that there may be some physical effects of not getting enough sun.
Well, that's right. There was that study that came out that said maybe you should get 15 minutes of sun without the sunscreen on to soak up some vitamin D.
Yeah, well, yeah, we've known for many years that vitamin D is important and for bones and rickets, and ultraviolet light is a source for that. And we all know, anybody who's lived in Wisconsin for a while or north of the 45th parallel, is that you can suffer from seasonal depression if you don't get enough sun.
Yeah. What is your advice when it comes to these tanning products, these various, you know, bronzers or self-tanners? Are those safe?
Oh, they are in a way, but, you know, it's sort of like reinforcing the idea that you have to look tan, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so if you want to change that paradigm, then, you know, maybe use less of it. You don't have to look. You can still be healthy nowadays without having to have an artificial appearance to you. But I did want to say that now we know that there was a study recently that showed that if they took 14 volunteers and they showed that if they didn't get enough sun, there was you can block the response of relaxation with an opiate blocker, and that was the first sign that you can have some dependency or withdrawal sign if you don't get enough sun. In addition to the seasonal depression.
So right? We can be addicted to the sun.
Mildly, yes, there's a possibility of that. But the study was small and it was selected, although it was double-blinded and placebo-blinded. It only had, as I said, I think 16 patients in it. And by giving an opiate blocker, something like, so someone had like a morphine addiction, you gave this an opium blocker against morphine. The individuals, actually, four of the eight individuals that had sun bed exposure, ended up having withdrawal signs such as nausea and jitteriness and shakiness, which was not observed in the other control group. That was not observed in the other control group.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Snow, dermatologist and surgeon for skin cancer treatment at UW Health in Madison, a Mohs surgeon. He's also a professor of dermatology at the UW Medical School. We're talking about skin cancer and answering your questions. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, it's our Friday Week in Review. We're welcoming in Ann Althaus and Georgia Durslotti this week to talk with you about the news of the week. Right now, we're talking with Dr. Stephen Snow, a dermatologist and a surgeon for skin cancer at UW Health in Madison, a professor of dermatology at the UW Medical School, talking with us and answering your questions about preventing and treating skin cancer. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. An email in from John in Milwaukee asking a general question. Dr. Snow, are there any sunscreens which are better than others in terms of preventing skin cancer, or are they all the same?
You know, when they first came out 10 years ago or 15 years ago, they're all SPF 15, which means they gave you 15 times protection without using a sunscreen. But now with the ozone layer being undergoing depletion and people getting more sun exposure, I think we're up to number 30, and some people use 50, but it's not really the numbers, really the frequency and intensity of your usage. I mean, if you go outside and you're sweating a lot, then you have to reapply it pretty frequently, 5-10 minutes if you're really athletic, and a half hour or an hour if you're out there relaxing for a walk or so.
Yeah. I've heard differing advice when it came to that number. You say the number's not so important, but I've heard it doesn't really do any good if you have a 50 or a 70, that having 30 is adequate.
I don't know. I mean, psychologically, it's a lot better. And, you know, there may be, actually, it's the intensity you should, of application and thoroughness that you use it with and reapplying it.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people would be satisfied. Most dermatologists would recommend at least a 30 now, especially if you had a skin cancer.
Yeah. What about the beauty products that I've seen and actually I have used that say SPF 15 on them? That's just not good enough.
Well, it's good if you use it intensively and you mm-hmm. reapply it. So I applaud people who use the sunscreen. I use it and I play soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to reapply it every time I take a rest, which is pretty frequently.
Yeah. Let's take some calls. Our lines are full. John in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thanks. I'm curious how one should reconcile this kind of conflicting advice that you should get sun exposure for vitamin D production, but not get it for to prevent skin cancer. And I'm curious if you still are producing vitamin D if you are wearing a good sunscreen.
Yeah,
I think it's very hard for the average person to do that, except that I would say that getting enough sun, they recommend at least 15 minutes, especially if you're in the growing period, and maybe up to an hour, but at least don't burn. I mean, if you get an erythema or redness, then you've had too much sun. As far as vitamin D is concerned and ultraviolet light, I don't know the action spectrum for vitamin D, but it's probably in the UVA, UVB range.
Yeah, what is the difference between UVA and UVB?
It's wavelengths of light. They're arbitrarily divided. UVB is 320. 280 to 320 nanometers, and UVA is the longer wavelength, and it's at 320 to 400.
Yeah.
And the UV bed, the ultraviolet beds are, the tanning beds are UVA, and if you're not careful, you can get burns, acute burns of the skin and cornea, and long term, the UVA causes wrinkling and cataracts.
Ah, all right, so that's the one that's going to make us look old, but it supposedly is not so dangerous when it comes to skin cancer if you're in a tanning bed.
Right. I think the most knowledge now says that the data shows that UVB is the most critical factor, but there are skin cancers that occur from UVA. In fact, individuals who have had PUVA, like psoriasis, they get ultraviolet A light. They have 1.5 times the rate of developing skin cancer, melanoma, and non-melanoma skin cancers, too, in the areas that were exposed to the light therapy.
Next, we go to Amy in Johnson Creek. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say I do agree with, like, what you're saying about the 15 minutes. You know, too much of a good thing isn't always a good thing. I also wanted to ask, how would I tell friends in an appropriate way if they're putting themselves at risk by doing all the tanning that they're doing? I'm a few years older than them, but they're still peers of mine, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
But I'm not real sure how to bring to them my concerns for them, because I also do home care, and I'm taking care of people that have had skin cancer, that have had to go through the surgery of having those spots removed, and even if they're small spots, I've seen it be, I think, equally as traumatic for them.
Yeah, and yeah. So you wanted to, these are people who are sun tanning without sunscreen, Amy?
I'm not real sure if it's without sunscreen. I know one of them frequents the tanning beds quite often, so I would assume there's no sunscreen there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's gotten quite dark, and she's fairly young. I mean, I think she's only like 19, and I have concern for her because I really would hate to see her be one of my next home care clients that, you know, is going through the trauma of having to have these surgeries done and everything.
Yeah. Dr. Snow?
I think that's a very good question, but you know, we're starting to think that that ultraviolet light is what they call an SRD, substance-related disorder, much like alcohol and nicotine. And there's some dependency going on, and this is evidenced by withdrawal signs, as I mentioned before, some loss of control, and sort of like a denial that you can or you increase your risk despite the adverse consequences that you may have. And these are all part of it, dependency kind of, quote, syndrome, and related to SRD, substance-related disorder.
So seriously, Amy,
I even have a word
Amy's
for
friend
it.
Might need to go to a 12-step program or something. That's what it sounds like.
This thing is very incomplete, mm-hmm. and we're just touching the tip of the iceberg, really. But it's only been in the last, I think, 5-7 years, some of these some of this data has been coming out now in the public.
It's fascinating.
It is.
Cindy in Duluth, hi, you're on the air. Cindy, are you there? Cindy, I guess, went away. So we will go next to Laura in Greenfield. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Laura.
Yes, it's Laura. Thank you. My father has a skin condition since he was 18 or 19 called, I think it's called impetigo, where you lose all the pigment in your skin. And my concern is that he's an avid golfer, and he does wear sandals in the summer, and he's stubborn about putting on any sunscreen. And my sisters and I have been on him about this for the last few years, but he gets so badly burned sometimes in the summer that he gets, you know, his skin actually gets very red and puffy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a conversation with him last summer about this, and I said, you know, you just need to have your sunscreen in every location you're at and just put it on several times a day. And he said, oh, I just forget. So I'm just really concerned about him, and I'm wondering about, he's 70. So, you know, I'm just wondering about his chances for developing a certain type of skin cancer, what that might be, what the percentages are. So I can share some of this information with him so he's got a little bit more of a realistic view of, hey, this is a big risk for me with this condition. The condition is just on part of his neck and then on his hands and feet. It's not on his whole body.
Yeah, that's where your skin, it turns completely white.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dr. Snow?
I think the condition that he has is albinism or vitiligo, and that's when you have a loss of pigment and of the skin. And individuals who have no pigment in the skin, Fitzpatrick type 1, like CELTs and English individuals, they will develop squamous cell carcinomas. And I know it's very hard to, I myself have a hard time applying sunscreen because it feels so greasy, but I figured out that, you know, I'm just meaning this in jest, but maybe it would help if you told him that, you know, if he applied it regularly, you wouldn't have to worry about getting skin cancer. Maybe his game may improve.
Yeah, there we go.
He must be a good golfer because, you know, because he gets too much sun. He must hit that ball a mile and get it all in a fairway all the time.
Yeah, so you heard a study on the radio that said that would happen, Laura. Cindy in Duluth is back with us now. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question concerning my son. My son, he's tanned just extremely easily.
Yeah.
Even when he was a baby, you know, he turns dark so fast. In fact, sometimes he says it's almost embarrassing because he gets so dark so fast. He says it must look to people like all I do is sit around in the sun or something. And what I was wondering about that is I know that a tan represents a damage to the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, does it, by tanning easily, is that something that is preventative? Is it, or is it, are you getting just as much damage as if you'd had a burn?
That's a real hard question. You know, I would say that in the beginning, you're getting protection, but as you get more sun the cells start turning over, and we know that the sun is really a basic carcinogen. So when the cells start turning over, when you're starting, that means that the getting too much proliferation, that would mean that the skin would be scaling and peeling more, that it may be getting too much sun. in general, because what you want to have is not this kind of potential where you get so much sun that you're actually causing genetic damage to the cells of the skin.
Yeah. Well, we have lots of callers who have questions, and unfortunately not enough time to take any more on the air. Dr. Snow, you say there will be, at least in Madison, a skin cancer screening on
June 2nd
at the right. YWCA.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Snow, dermatologist, Mohs surgeon for skin cancer treatment at UW Health in Madison, a professor of dermatology at the UW Medical School. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour, and thanks to you for listening. If you would like to listen to any of our talk shows, once again, you can go to our website. They're all archived there, wpr.org, or you can purchase a CD copy of any of them through the radio store, 1-800-747-7444, 1-800-747-7444. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.